Welcome back to Now Showing. I'm Patty Holly. The St. Joseph Museum is adding to its Native American collection. The museum recently received a gift of items from Pam Smith Connolly. Public Relations Officer for the St. Joseph Museum, Kathy Reno, says the artifacts were from the estate of Elizabeth Campbell Smith.
It includes Kachina dolls, elaborate beadwork, pottery, fans. The pipe bags are a personal favorite just because of the intricate beadwork. So those are the majority of the collection is dolls, jewelry, moccasins, blankets, from different parts of the state. A few of them are from tribes where maybe we didn't have a great deal.
Why is this something that the St. Joseph Museum would want to acquire?
Because a few of the pieces do fill in our gaps in our collection, and there aren't many. Obviously, we have one of the best in the Midwest. But she had some unusual pieces, and she asked that we take the collection in its entirety. So it gives us the ability to do a new room to Native Americans, to American Indian history, obviously. And our curator of collections got very creative and was able to, just through some photos she had taken herself, do a backdrop where she shows the parts of the country that the objects are from. So it gives us the ability to do a completely new room on American Indian artifacts and fills in a couple of gaps we may have had.
Tell me a little bit about the items that the St. Joseph Museum did have. You know, what kinds of items did you have, and how does that help us understand Native American history?
We actually showcase American Indian artifacts from 10 different cultural regions, and it's everything from pipes and bags and fetishes to the beadwork may be on clothing, if that particular tribe did beadwork, fans. I admit the fans are some of my favorites, and stunning pottery. This collection gives us a chance to show a little bit more of the Southwest, which is something we didn't have a great deal on. I would say that it helps us understand their history because we've done it in sections that show you warfare, what bonnets were war bonnets, what were war items, and what were the items of peace. You'll see pipes and fetishes. That type of thing. So you understand not only their culture, but also how their environment affected everything in their lives, what they wore, what their lodges looked like, what they hunted, obviously. So the clothing, we can show the vast difference in clothing in the 10 cultural regions, because obviously they're using the materials that are native to their area, and it really helps us understand that. They knew how to adapt to their circumstances.
Kathy Reno is the public relations officer for the St. Joseph Museum. She says the new American Indian exhibit will be unveiled tomorrow evening at an opening exhibit from 5 o'clock until 7 o'clock. The reception is open to the public. The exhibit will then be available for viewing during regular museum hours of 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 1 p.m. until 5 p.m. on Sundays. The museum is at 3406 Frederick Avenue in St. Joseph. The Chillicothe Area Arts Council is bringing a legendary country musician to Chillicothe this weekend. Gene Watson has had 23 top 10 hits and 6 number 1 records throughout his career. Administrator for the Chillicothe Area Arts Council, Julie Ashbrook, says Gene Watson and his farewell party band will be performing in Chillicothe on Sunday.
I just expect a terrific, terrific time. I think he'll do a beautiful job, and we have sold many, many tickets. And so I know we're going to have a very enthusiastic crowd, and that always makes it nice for the entertainers.
For people who are not familiar with Gene Watson, can you tell me a little bit about his background?
Well, he was born in Texas, and he was a mechanic who was just a talented musician, loved to sing, and played with a band there and kind of got noticed. He sailed on into the mainstream. And he's in his late 60s now and still a very popular performer. He was at the Grand Ole Opry in August and plays there pretty frequently, and he came out with a duet recording with Rhonda Vincent, who has been voted the Bluegrass Female Vocalist of the Year many times. So they combined bluegrass and country, and they did an album called Your Money and My Good Looks. And so anyway, he just he has a great following, and he's still doing lots of work.
Why did the Arts Council choose to have Gene Watson come to your area?
Rhonda Vincent was here 2 years ago, and she was so well received that I asked her manager if there was someone else that he would like to recommend to us, and he recommended Gene. It's exciting for us because we have people coming from northern Iowa and St. Louis and Topeka and Wichita and Illinois. So we know he has a big following, and that's really fun for us to be giving something to the community that, you know, people are coming from so far to see.
That was the administrator for the Chillicothe Area Arts Council, Julie Ashbrook. She says Gene Watson and his Farewell Party Band will be performing Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Dickinson Performing Arts Center. The theater is located at the intersection of Highways 190 and 65. She says advance tickets are recommended. Ticket information is available by calling the Arts Council at 660-646-1173 or by emailing arts@chillicothemo.com. Northwest Missouri State University plays host to a unique musical experience Tuesday evening. Associate Professor of Music at Northwest, Dr. Anthony Olson, says pianist Megumi Masaki will perform a multimedia concert.
She's an associate professor of piano at Brandon University up in Canada, and she's going to do a multimedia concert for us. Several pieces on the program. One I know is piano music to an animated film, new music. Dr. Masaki is a strong proponent of new music, and I believe that particular piece she commissioned herself. Several other pieces on the program have images projected up on two screens on stage, so we're really looking forward to it. It's a unique experience and a type of repertoire that is rarely experienced around here on campus.
What is the point of having the video behind the music in a concert setting like this?
It's just a new way to experience piano music, I guess, and a new way to experience visuals on stage in a concert setting.
Why did Northwest invite her to come perform here?
Well, I met Meg over in a couple of times at conferences over in Europe, and her topics that she presented were always so fascinating to me, so I brought the idea back home and discussed it with our keyboard colleagues here, and we all thought it would be a wonderful idea because it's a type of thing that we ourselves don't explore in our own concerts, and we thought this would be a way of offering something unique to our students and to the community.
Are there any pieces of music that you are really excited to hear that she'll be performing during this concert?
Well, I guess the piece that she commissioned herself, entitled Hitchcock Etudes for Solo Piano, subtitled Glitch and Film, was commissioned just last year by composer Nicole Liste. I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly. It just looks like something just totally unique. I don't know exactly what we're in for, but I'm sure it'll be a very enjoyable experience.
Dr. Anthony Olson is Associate Professor of Music at Northwest Missouri State University. He says Megumi Masaki will perform Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock in the Charles Johnson Theater in the Fine Arts Building on the Northwest campus. Concert season at Northwest Missouri State University. Next Thursday, the Northwest Madrilleers will be performing their fall concert. The Madrilliers are a select group of 38 graduate and undergraduate students at the university. Associate Professor of Music, Dr. Brian Lanier, is the director of the Madrilliers.
We do a fall concert each year. We study music from composers from the Renaissance all the way to contemporary composers. I mean, composers who are still alive right now. And so we do try to explore all kinds of musical styles and genres and languages. And it's just, first of all, it's very interesting to sing music of other languages, and it also gives our students some support and some appreciation for, you know, other languages, other cultures, other things that are going on in the world just besides what we do here. The program, in fact, in the spring, the Madrilliers have been invited to sing at two pretty important events. We'll be singing for the Missouri Music Educators Association Convention, and that's in January at Tantara Resort in Osage Beach. And then in March, we'll be making our second appearance at the Southwest Division of the American Choral Directors Association Convention, and that will be in Dallas. We sang there at that convention in 2008, and we got invited back at our first year of eligibility, so we're pretty excited about that too. And so the music that we'll be doing, as I said, is quite varied. We'll be doing a piece by Gastoldi named Amor Vittorioso, which is a very short piece in Italian, very robust, very energetic piece. And then we do a piece by Gerald Finzi named My Spirit Sang All Day. Just a beautiful a cappella number. And students who have auditioned ever for the Missouri All-State Choir would be familiar with this piece, but we really, really enjoy singing that. A piece by Johann Pachelbel is titled Jauchzet im Herrn, which basically is a setting of Psalm 100. It's praise to the Lord. And so it's a very inspiring piece for double choir and continuo. And so we're really excited about doing that one. A composer named Henk Battings, who is a Dutch composer, composed some pieces about the Breton region of England. Three songs about this region. And we're to be doing two of those. One is La Nuit en Mer, which is the sea at night. And his last one of that set, called Soir d'été, which is a summer's evening. And it's very interesting, as we made this comment the other day in class, that a lot of the imagery and the description of things that he writes in this, that he has set in this song, are images that are actually very familiar to us in this part of America, because he talks about the aroma of cut hay and as the evening is approaching in the summer and the tiny crickets. And so these are all things that students can really relate to, which is kind of neat. A piece by Kirk Meacham called Papageno and the Prince, which is kind of a little parody, fable, mini little opera piece, which is kind of fashioned after the Mozart opera, The Magic Flute. But this one's only 3 minutes long, so that's good. And finally, we'll be doing a piece from the very famous opera by Mascagni called Cavalleria Rusticana, which is the Easter hymn called Regina Caeli, which features the chorus in a very robust, very romantic presentation of operatic singing. And there'll be a couple of other performers alongside that. One is our accompanist, Dr. Charles Badami. He'll be doing some pieces. He's going to be doing a set of music, solo music by Chopin. And I think that that would be a fantastic reason to come alone just to hear him play the piano. And then the Low Brass Ensemble, which is directed by our department chair, Dr. Woodruff, that group will be performing some pieces as well on that concert. So it'll be a really fun evening of a variety of music, and then the Madrilliers will finish the concert at the end.
It sounds like you have such a wide variety of dynamics and types of music. Is it pretty challenging for the students?
Well, it is challenging. One of the things that we like to do is to demonstrate all of our skills in different types of repertoire. When you sing for events like the ACDA convention, the Choral Directors Association, they really kind of like for you to demonstrate different music from at least two or three different time periods. And so we do that, and I think it's there are several purposes for that. The first purpose is being just the interest level of singing music from a variety of time periods, as well as just different composers. And then it also gives us a chance to teach performance practice to our students. For instance, we would use a particular tone or a particular approach to singing a piece from the Renaissance or a piece from the Baroque period, like the Pachelbel piece. It's a completely different style or a different approach to tone production and maybe vibrato rates and just the weight of the sound that you would want to see in the opera piece. And so our singers are quite capable of doing this, and I think they really enjoy the challenge.
It sounds like with the invitations that you have for this year that they are up to the challenge, but that must make you feel very, very good as the director of this group to know that this organization is thought so highly of.
Well, that is true, and our students are very hard workers, and it does make me feel good, and other colleagues in the department have had similar successes, and our choirs are and our musical groups are recognized at local and regional and even state level and national levels, which is really fantastic. It does so many good things for us. It gives us a great venues to perform in. It also gives great visibility for Northwest, because these events that our choirs will be performing at this year gives a real spotlight on the educational value of things that are going on at Northwest. And believe me, that goes a long way in the field of music, because people recognize that good teaching is going on here. And it is a good thing.
What do you attribute this success to?
Well, the tribute to the success to a number of things. Number one is just the talent of our students. We have very talented students who come in, and they're probably even more important than that is their willingness to put in the time and effort that it takes. You know, being super talented is one thing, but having talent and then being willing to put in the time it takes to refine that talent and come together as an ensemble and work together as a team, those are the really important elements that make a choir successful, and ultimately you can achieve the kind of levels of performance that we have been able to do. To receive an invitation to sing at the ACDA convention, it's necessary for a choir or a director to send in a representative recording from three consecutive years. In other words, I have to send in a piece of music from last year, the year before that, and the year before that, because what they're looking for is consistency from year to year. And then when you get that invitation based on that consistency, that's a pretty good feeling that, you know, you're doing some things right and the students are doing some things right. So it's very exciting.
Dr. Brian Lanier is the director of the Northwest Missouri State University Madrilleers. He says the Madrilleers will perform next Thursday at 8 o'clock in the Charles Johnson Theater on the Northwest campus. The performance is open to the public.
Until recently, other than the Disney classics, the target audience for animated films was Rugrats. These movies were a blessing to parents who could drop off the kids at the theater and go home to do whatever mom and dad wanted to do for an hour of kid-free time. But technology has revolutionized animation. Pixar and reorganized Pixar Disney and upstart DreamWorks make animated movies that parents want to see along with the kids instead of staying at home for personal time. This may be a good or bad thing, depending on your disposition, but the latest DreamWorks release, Puss in Boots, is another one that parents can enjoy at least as much as their kids, maybe more. Puss in Boots is a prequel to the Shrek movies, still in the fairyland world populated by both humans and fairy tale characters. It tells of how the orphaned puss came to be the valiant, wandering thief and adventurer that we saw in Shrek. It opens with Puss, voiced by the Latin lover Antonio Banderas, performing a James Bond caper to steal into the home of a man who has a clowder of cats for an assignation with one of the ladies. He also steals a ring and then has to leave in a hurry. The lady kitty sighs in contentment as he steals away. He's a love him and leave him kind of cat. Why do I do this? He speculates to us, then shrugs his shoulders and leers. Let's face it, I'm a bad kitty. The scene shifts to Puss in another Bondian episode as he tries to burglarize a castle. He's aced out by a mysterious masked cat. He pursues this fierce kitty into a Mexican-looking village and runs into Humpty Dumpty, his former blood brother and recent enemy. He discovers that the cat who aced him out is sexy Kitty Softpaws, Humpty's partner in crime. We get a digression that reveals how Puss became the fabulous Puss in Boots after being left on the doorsteps of an orphanage. There he teamed up with Humpty, another orphan, to steal in their childhood. Their blood brotherhood ended when each thinks he was betrayed by the other. Humpty and Kitty Softpaws scheme to steal the magic beans that would lead to the goose that lays the golden eggs in a giant's castle in the sky. They want to recruit Puss to be part of the team. Puss initially rejects the idea of collaborating on a burglary with a smooth-talking Humpty. The beans are held by Jack and Jill, a couple of very unsavory characters. But he relents, so off we go with a lot of fight and chase scenes, all done in really splendid animation. The storyline for Puss in Boots is inconsistent and doesn't bear thinking about too much. But hey, it's a fairy tale. It borrows from a variety of them. Then there are some good laughs from cat jokes. Kitty stops Puss from running away at one point with a flashlight spot that he can't resist stopping to chase despite himself in cat-like fashion. Puss goes into a bar and orders a shot. He gets a shot glass full of milk, which he laps instead of slamming it down like human boozers. The restroom in another bar, patronized by cats, has a litter box sign on the door. Movie allusions abound, from spaghetti westerns to James Bond to Star Wars. All this inspires some chuckles from parents that kids wouldn't catch, but the real virtue of this film is incredibly beautiful animation art. It isn't that it looks realistic or lifelike in any sense. It's just beautiful in its own universe. No details are omitted. I laughed at the way the animators made Puss's and Kitty's long whiskers move independently as they talk. And when Puss is shown with Kitty, their tails twitch in cat-like fashion. Puss in Boots has lots of warts in terms of storyline, but the CG animation and pacing keep us from thinking about the thin gruel of the plot. So I'm giving it 4 stars out of 5, even though it might keep Mom and Dad at home. And if you like the adventures of the brave Puss in Boots, be patient. The ending of this one sets up a sequel. Big surprise.
That was KXCD KRNW movie reviewer Dr. Carol Fry. You can find information and links to the events and organizations you hear about on Now Showing on the KXCD KRNW website, kxcv.org. You can also listen to archived editions of the program by clicking on the Now Showing link on our homepage. Please join us again next Thursday for another edition of Now Showing. In the meantime, have a great weekend. For KXCV KRNW, I'm Patty Hawley.